Oh my god, is this thing on? Is this thing on? Oh jeez. George is over here in the background singing the final countdown. We always have fun sitting around here waiting for the live stream to start, and there's always something going on in the background. George is back. She is in charge of the chat again tonight. And glad to have her back. Last week, she was out doing her theater festival, and she was producing. So that went well, and now I get to have her back for the evening. And let's see. You may have noticed at the beginning, we added a new screen for Patreon, and all of our Patreon supporters are going to be listed there. So, if you are interested in supporting us by Patreon, then you can go to amavidi.com/Patreon. No, patreon.com/amavidi. That's it. And you can support us at whatever level you like. No obligation, no expectation. Just wanted to put it out there so that if folks like what we're doing, they can support us in some small way. And with that, I have Dark Path, who is going to be joining me here in just a moment. I've got Manda from Dark Path, and I will bring her on in just a moment. This afternoon, we did a session with Twilight Meadow Creations, and that will be going out as a pre-recorded stream, and we'll probably release that probably a week from Monday. So I'll give you guys a little heads up before that goes live, and we're going to do that a little bit differently. We're going to do it as a premiere so that everybody can actually watch the episode together, and me and B and Cade from Twilight Meadow Creations will be joining us in the chat. And so as we're watching it live, you guys can ask questions and we'll respond in the chat. So that should be interesting. I want to give that a try and see how it goes. But we did it that way because Twilight Meadow Creations is based in Sweden. So the time zones did not work for us. But Dark Path is in Australia. So the time zones are actually working in our favor this way. Because while it is 7 o'clock on July 3rd here, it's 10 a.m. on July 4th in Australia right now. So, this is going to work out pretty well. Now, if I can figure out how to work this thing, I'm going to bring Amanda on. I keep saying Amanda. Manda. Oops, that's the wrong button. How do I do this? There it is. I am so sorry. I keep mispronouncing your name, Manda.
It's okay. Technically, it is Amanda, but I just always drop the A.
Okay. Well, I wanted to say thank you for joining me, and it is awesome to have you. I have been watching your work for some time and been jealous of your TikToks and the work that you've been doing there. And I'm just thrilled to have you. So thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Well, good. Now, I mentioned that you have a TikTok. How has that been going for you? And how have you been using that?
Well, it was a little bit scary over the weekend because we thought we lost it. But it's been doing really well. So we've got to a point now where we've built sort of a nice little community that's on there, and we only ever show the items that aren't specifically phallic looking. Mm-hmm. So like our nicks and things like that, but it's more work than I thought it would be.
Gotcha.
It's we're on it pretty much hourly to hourly for a few minutes, just to go through comments, check comments, delete comments, block anyone who we think is a minor.
Yeah.
A lot of work.
Yeah, it is. But it is a way that we can share our process. And that's how I've been using it. And it has been really great for folks who are curious about the process and how we do things. And like you said, you know, you kind of have to play the game a little bit with what you show and what you don't show. So that is definitely a hurdle to cross. Now, do you do live streams on TikTok?
We did a couple, like some wrapping and packing ones that we did. And we did one that was a demolding one. But we did find that, you know, particular models of ours, Hierophant, for example, is phallic looking. And I accidentally showed it and it got flagged and the live stream got stopped, which is fair enough. So
I've had that happen to me
since.
Once. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But generally, as long as you stick to things that aren't phallic, then you can get away with it. And it sounds like you're really active about keeping minors out of your following.
Yeah, I think it's tricky because you're going to get minors no matter where you are. You're going to get them on Twitter and they're not going to have their age. You're going to get them on Insta and they're going to say they're 19 and they're 13. It's going to happen. But we'll go in and anything, any comment where we see their little picture looks questionable, then we block them. Usually certain types of comments are pretty obvious that they're a minor, so we just straight away block them. Or if we go in and we question it and we can't see what any of their content is, we still block them anyway.
Gotcha.
So, and then if they come to Instagram and messages, which we've had, I've blocked someone on TikTok, they've come to Instagram message and I said, look, your profile looks like a minor and I'm going to keep you out of my content. And they ended up actually sending me, God love them, a photo of their license. And I was like, please don't, like, I don't need that. Yeah. To prove that they were actually 23. So they aged incredibly well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would rather be wrong and delete someone, block them by accident, than keep them on there and not know.
Right. Yeah. That's one of the things about the toy making community that I have noticed is that they are very good and very active about making sure that the folks who do see their content are appropriate, or that the content that they post is at least benign enough that it's probably not going to catch the eye of somebody who's underage.
Yeah.
Now, like I said, I've loved your TikToks for a long time, and I'm really happy to see the results that you've gotten there. But I've actually been watching your pores or your products on Twitter as well. And I have to say, I'm a goth at heart, and I love the aesthetic that you have developed. Tell me about how that came about and where you're drawing your inspiration from.
So essentially, that's kind of my vibe anyway, when I have the time and the effort. I have my own little, I call my little sort of witchy corner at home on a bench. And that's sort of me anyway. Like, I fall under that sort of, not really pagan, it's not really a chaos witchcraft, I guess.
Okay, yeah.
And yeah, so it just sort of naturally fell to, well, this is kind of where I want to go with the toys and things, because I didn't want anything that was really obviously looking like a penis, because I think there's already heaps of wonderful makers out there that do great work like that.
Right.
So let's do something different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what's interesting about what you're talking about is, you know, you're kind of drawing from your own aesthetic and from your own background, and how that has kind of led you down the path, so to speak, of where you are. And, you know, they say that if you can start with a customer of one, yourself, you're probably going to find a market, because you've found something that other people aren't doing. And so that's really awesome that you've done that. But how have you developed that into the business that you have going today?
Well, funnily enough, like, we actually, when we first started looking at Dark Path, we started with the candles, because we are members of our local kink community, and all the candles and stuff that we tried they were too hot for me to use. So Troy spent about 12 months working on candles that I could use on my skin. And then it kind of built there. And then one day I was just fooling around on the laptop, and I turned around and went, oh, maybe we could do doodles too. And then it was really rocky for a good 6 months.
How long was your development process? How long did it take you to go from that idea of maybe we could do this to getting your first product?
So we probably researched for about 12 months off and on, more on than off, and found information, but not all the information we have now. And it wasn't until we launched, and stuff wasn't great. When we first launched, there was seam lines, which I hated.
Right.
There was, you know, we'd catch bubbles in things because we weren't used to how we would need to create a design in order to not catch bubbles, and all sorts of things. So we got pulled through the ringer for it, rightly so. And then it was really sort of more as we got into the Twitter community, which I'd never been on Twitter before, so that was a really interesting morning that I decided to join Twitter. that was a whirlwind. And started to connect with other makers, and they were sharing the knowledge and stuff that pennies just started to drop.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, cool. So if I tweak this, this is going to work heaps better.
Yeah.
So really it's been, it's really been a lot of the support within the community.
It's amazing how much support the other makers give to the folks who are either new to the category, or even folks who've been around for a while and they're experimenting with different processes and different ideas. The other makers are a wonderful resource, and they love sharing the information that they have. So, I mean, it's great that you were able to take that resource and run with it. And also there are a couple of Discords that the makers are on, which is a great place for folks to learn as well. So if folks are out there and they're interested in getting started, reach out to the other makers. We'll guide you. Because the one thing is that I think all of us want to make a safe product. And if we can help people make a safe product, then we're going to do it. Because this is the community that we like. This is the community that we're a part of. So, yeah. Now, I'm gonna take a left turn here a little bit. And you were talking about the wax and being part of the kink community. How did you kind of bring the two together, or did you bring the kink community into the business that you do, or are they still separate?
I think because we do the wax and things like that, the kink community is definitely a big part of the business. I think here in Australia, there was only sort of really two other people that were doing any sort of wax clay candles, and there was stuff with each of them. You know, not a low temp or colours would stain, things like that. So we were also really lucky enough that because we were already part of the community, we could go to our elders within the community and be like, right, test this, run it by, like, what is this like? Give me your knowledge.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, the kink community is definitely a part of what we do, especially with bringing in like our paddles and our acrylic knives and stuff like that, giving people options to play the way they want to play, but do it safely.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I had a thought, but I lost it. So I'm going to have to come back to it, and I'm going
to
go back through
my world.
Right. So I have to rely on my notes again. I got George back here laughing at me, so I'm gonna be embarrassed for a moment here. You have a drop coming up. Tell me about the drop. When is that?
So it's our time, the 13th of July, around 10 or 11 o'clock.
In the morning?
In the morning, yep.
Okay, so that should be on the 12th. In the evening for those of us in the United States. Okay.
Yep. So every time I do a drop announcement and stuff now, I pop different time zones on the bottom of my drop announcement to sort of let people know what it is in their time zone.
Right.
So it's the 12th or the 13th, depending on where you're at. We've got our Lust model, which is the second of our seven deadly sins. That'll be coming out. Had some issues with that mold, but I'm working on it. And we have our Orochi dragon as well. That'll be launching on that day, which we'll have some pre-mades for, and then we'll allow it to be customed. And we've also got our acrylic knives as well. That'll be the first time that they're on the store. And they're all pre-made. We won't do customs with them.
Gotcha. Now, the Lust model, tell me about that. Do you have an example of that you can share yet? Or is that still so far into the production process that you haven't gotten one yet?
No, my master copies are at home.
Okay.
And I only have failed models here. Failed molds.
But that was inspired by the seven deadly sins?
Yeah. So we've got envy, which is the eye on the tentacle, which was a design by Nyx or Scaled Sin, I think it is. They work with Monster Smash. So that was the first design we've actually ever purchased off anyone. Usually we do it all ourselves, but I fell in love with it, so I bought it. So that's Envy, because it's an eye.
Okay.
And then we did Lust, which was meant to be a Medusa-style situation, and then it just didn't happen.
Okay.
So then I edited my design and stuff, and it became Lust. So it would look sort of really kind of pretty and elegant and things like that.
Okay. But then the Orochi, tell me about that, because I think that one's a little bit different, isn't it?
Yes. I have some here that I've made, if you want me to go grab one.
Sure.
Right, 2 seconds.
Yep. Now, while Amanda is doing that, I am going to remind everyone that we do this every Sunday night, 7 o'clock Central Time, and you can join us on YouTube and drop your questions in the chat. We've got George, who is collecting all of those and going to be sending them my way. And we'll get to those in just a little bit. But Amanda is back, and I think it's time for show and tell. Oh, those are awesome. Are those are those dragon skulls?
Yeah, so they're essentially a skull.
Okay. And now that is more of a grinder, isn't it?
Yes, but technically both. So we designed it so the horns are actually insertable.
Okay.
As well. But it's got the grinding pad on top and also the raised horn at the front.
Right.
The grinding. And it's big enough on the butt to do a suction cup or anything like that as well.
Excellent.
Yeah. So that was another, it was originally going to be our pride for the seven deadly sins, and it was going to be the dragon skull on a like a frame, like an ornate frame. Mm-hmm. But then I just couldn't get it to work, and then Troy did a lot of the main modeling work, and then I took it and did the details, and we kind of got to where we got, and we just went, you know what, let's just stop. That's really good, let's not over design it.
So how do you decide when to stop? You know, you've got the design process, and it sounds like you work with somebody who helps you in that regard. But when do you decide that something is done?
Yeah, so, I mean, 90% of the design work is me, but every so often Troy does as well, mainly because I'm a control freak and I don't let him do a lot of it, to be honest. How do I decide when something's done? When I hit the level that I've undone and redone something more than 5-6 times and I'm about ready to launch my mouse, that's usually a really good indication that I need to stop.
Gotcha. You know, this was actually part of the conversation that came up this morning with B over at Twilight Meadow Creations. And it seems to be an ongoing theme about folks who do this, is that we're perfectionists and we like to control every single part of the process. And one of the things I've had to learn, and I still struggle with this, is delegation and letting people help. Is that something that you struggle with as well?
In the beginning, you know, before Troy was pouring silicon and it was just me doing it all the time, Troy would always joke around and say, one day you're going to have to give it up and you're going to have to allow me to pour stuff. And I told him no, he could get effed. But
I love the voice there, by the way.
He's definitely probably a few octaves lower, but for comedic relief.
Yeah.
He's now staring at me. I thought it was going to be really, really hard to allow him to pour. And it was okay, though, but I think, like, necessity was the beast. I couldn't physically do it all before. Like, when we kind of hit that point, I couldn't do it all myself. I was, you know, waking up at 5 a.m. and going to bed at 2 a.m. Right. Just to try to get orders done, and it just wasn't possible anymore. So I had to let a bit of it go, and it was okay. Like, now that I've done it, it's okay. And we've now got Chloe and Milo, who I just looked at Milo and he just looked at me, he's like side-eyeing me. So Chloe and Milo are our employees now, and they help us out, and they're both pouring silicon as well now. I'm probably a little bit more of a control freak with them.
Yeah.
Don't giggle.
Well, one of the things that comes along with that, you know, that necessity, that feeling like we have to control everything, that we have to be involved with every part of that, is burnout. And, you know, mm-hmm. reaching that point where either you mentally or physically or both kind of shut down. How do you deal with that? How do you approach and deal with the possibility of burnout?
Partially, I think that's where ADHD is on my side.
Okay.
But really recently, we've started turning around and going, you know what, on a Tuesday afternoon, Troy will go pick the kids up from school and he will stay at home. And then he's not coming back to work. And on a Friday afternoon, I do the same. I leave, I go pick up the kids and I don't come back to work. It is really hard because I know that I hold such a high expectation for myself to get things done as quickly as possible, because I know people are waiting for their stuff, right? And 95% of everything we do is customs. So we're about a 7-ish week wait at the moment.
Wow.
And that kills me because we used to be 2 weeks. And I think it's trying to just more focus on what's, you know, the next 100 run of orders, what they are, picking my battles, and kind of just trying to roll with it.
And do you kind
of, which is really hard.
Yeah. So do you kind of create or establish boundaries for yourself to kind of protect yourself?
I try to.
Yeah, there's a lot of trying that happens in that world. I'm a part of it.
Yep, I try to. But Troy is probably my biggest, like, he'll turn around and he'll be like, no, like, enough's enough now. You need to stop.
Right. There was a comment in the chat that George has brought my attention to. And it kind of leads us into one of the topics I wanted to talk about. And it says, talk about your for anybody with anybody motto. Do you want to grab that and run with it?
Yeah. So for us, for anybody with anybody was our way of saying that a lot of our stuff that we make isn't designed particularly for just insertion. For example, like the dragons, they have the grindable, but they also can be inserted as well. Our mirrors are, yes, grindable, but they can also hold a vibe, but they are also like an open penetrable as well for a trans man who has a bit of bottom growth happening as well. So we try to make stuff that's not just for the regular heteronormative body types. And that includes people with like disabilities and things like that as well. Having certain bases on certain toys shaped a certain way so that they can use, you know, if they don't have this action with a wrist, they can do this action and it's still going to work.
Right. Yeah.
Trying to make things inclusive.
Right. And this is something I don't think that, this is a category that is probably overlooked a lot, is folks who have mobility issues or flexibility issues. Mm-hmm. And I in my notes here, because this is something that I wanted to talk about because I think it's something that is important to you as well, is designing for diversity and designing for folks who don't have the same range of motion as other folks. And I think that's a category that's well overlooked and something that I think needs more attention.
Yeah, it is. Sorry, 2 seconds. Troy, sure. My mum just called. Can you call her back?
And
sorry.
No, it's okay.
Mum. We don't ignore mum's calls.
Sure. Well, George is in the chat, and she mentioned that she has rheumatoid arthritis. And so she does have flexibility issues, range of motion issues, as well as strength issues. And so, mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't going to say anything until she threw it out there, but she did. So, you know, she is part of that community that needs more attention.
Yeah. I think it comes down to, like, our grind is a really good example where, yes, it's got the little strappy holes so that you can strap it down, but it's also designed specifically that way so that you could put Velcros over the back so that you could slide your hand up inside it, because if you don't have range of motion for your fingers, you've then got the grind paddle on your hand, which you can then use to do whatever you're doing around your body, and it's not going to come off your hand, so you don't have to grip.
Ah, that is a clever way of approaching that. So yeah. how do you design for inclusivity? Is that and maybe this gets into the form versus function conversation a little bit, mm-hmm. but is inclusivity part of the design process, or is that something that is an inspiration to start from?
Sometimes it's a little column A, a little column B. So sometimes I will be like, you know what? This doesn't exist and that's not fair. And then I'll work from there. Or other times I'll be sort of like a midway through a design and I'll have this ridiculous goblin energy and be like, you know what? Actually, that'd be amazing. And then I just go edit things.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I do, there has been designs though that we've sort of looked at and gone, you know what, it's only really going to be one use, so maybe we won't put it out. Or we've, our sheaths or our penetrables is, we did the thinner version and the thicker version, and then we thought actually, we had a friend, I will say a friend, they're on Twitter, they're a follower on Twitter. They'd reached out to us about it when I first started talking about it. And I said, actually, you know what, I'm going to send this to you for free, because the way I'm wanting this to work for a trans man, and I don't have that anatomy, so I can't tell exactly if it's going to work or not. So I said, look, I'm going to send this to you for free. It's not perfect, but I want you to tell me how it works for you. And so I did. And then they came back to me with info and stuff. And I was like, actually, that's great. I can edit this down and change this around, so that then that version of the sheath was going to work for that community.
Yeah. So when you do your product testing, do you have a group of folks that you use as your product testers, or how do you do your product testing and development?
Product testing, to be honest, there's some that we haven't even like product tested. We just kind of go, yeah, that's awesome, send it out. Send it into the world.
Right.
Others, like the sheath, we go, oh, I'm not sure if this is going to work. So, you know, if there's been people that have bought quite a bit from us, for example, and we know that they have the particular anatomy or they like a particular thing, then we'll reach out to them and go, hey, I know that you guys like this particular thing. We kind of want to test this. Would you test it for us?
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll just send it out to them for free so they can test it and then give us feedback on it. The other side of that is, there's also been other makers that I'll bounce ideas around with, and I'll flick them a message or something and go, hey, I think this works, like, where's your head at on it? And they'll come back and go, oh, well, that ridge there is going to cause a bubble, or that, think about that, think about that. And then so we go in and edit from there.
Uh-huh. Okay. I know for myself, I have a kind of a core group of folks that span the range of, you know, different body types and genders and all the different categories that one might try to put people into. And, you know, I will send it out to multiple people and even folks who I don't think it's going to be right for them, but I still want their feedback because they may come back with something that I hadn't considered. Like the Gibbolus is as much a texture toy as it is as much as it is a dildo. It's as just as much a texture toy. So, you know, that was something that was brought to my attention by one of my testers. Let's see. I want to make sure I've got everything. I'm kind of going back over George's notes here from the questions in the chat, and I think I'm going to try to combine a couple of things. Being that you're in Australia, are most of your customers in the United States or different parts of the world? How does that break down for you?
I think definitely a big portion of our customer base is international. It's not so much here. Our candles, on the other flip side, a good 90% of our candles are for Australia, which is good in a way because I get nervous every time we're sending candles out overseas and I know how they treat them, throwing them onto planes and the temperature, and it just scares the hell out of me.
Yeah.
But so 90% of our candles are Australia, and yeah, probably a good 60-70% of the silicone stuff is international.
Okay.
Predominantly US, I would say. I think it's harder because there is much more of a community in the US than there is here in Australia. And, you know, I've noticed quite a few Australians will sort of turn around and they'll see something and go, "Oh, Bad Dragon." And it's like, no, Duck Path.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there was something else. I think it's Fantasy Grove's Jacoby model.
Uh-huh.
I've seen something on Instagram the other day and someone commented under and went, "Oh, it's, oh yeah, Bad Dragon." And I couldn't help myself. I commented on TV and said, "No, Fantasy Grove."
Good. Yeah.
Like, no. So I think it's hard because because there isn't so much of a community in Australia as what there is in America. Everyone sort of in Australia will automatically go for the biggest name.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of sort of breaking that kind of cycle to go, actually, there is a metric crap ton of us that do stuff as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
That do some really cool stuff.
Right. And yeah, that was part of the reason why I did started doing the live streams again, was so that I could kind of bring a spotlight to the folks who are often overlooked, and that there are folks out there besides Bad Dragon that are doing some really awesome stuff. Now, because you're in Australia and, you know, 70% of your customers are international, and I know how expensive international shipping is, has that caused you any problems? Has there been any pushback on prices or shipping, or even with COVID? For a long time, I actually had some packages. I apologize. This is my brain going off now. But I had some packages stuck that were going to Australia. And they were stuck for 6 months during COVID. And, you know, I ended up just refunding them and said, "Hey, if it ever shows up, let me know." And then just kind of moved on from that. But, you know, that was a fairly expensive cost to me because, you know, that was probably over $100 a piece. And I had to just say, well, I just have to let that go. But how do you get any pushback on pricing or international shipping costs or time or anything like that?
We have had a bit of pushback on time for international shipping. And I think for a little while there, things seem to have gotten back to normal now. But for about 3 weeks there, everything was kind of hitting Chicago and then stopping.
Mm-hmm.
And just going nowhere from Chicago, just living rent-free in Chicago Airport.
Right.
So we had quite a few customers to sort of message us and go, well, hey, like, where is it? And so we'd have to double check. I've also found that I want to find the people that work in UPS or USPS or whoever it is and mark the packages as delivered before they're actually delivered. I want to find them and kneecap them because I'm sick of that shit.
Yep.
I'm just like, please don't mark things as delivered when they're not delivered. That's not fair.
Yeah.
So we've had to deal with that. But we haven't had too many issues with like the pricing and stuff for shipping because we literally only charge what we're charged for shipping. We don't charge any extra above that.
Yeah.
I think what makes it better, but is also a bit of a double-edged sword for us, is when you compare what our prices are for the size that our toys and stuff are, it's actually a lot cheaper. So it kind of makes up for the cost of postage to go in there, which right. is good for consumer, but not so great for us.
And does the currency exchange work in the favor of the customer as well? Or does it balance out?
Yeah. Sort of more works in the favor of the customer.
Okay.
So for example, something that like a majority of our normal Air Bunnies
yeah.
size toys, because I really don't like the word normal, but we'll use it for shits and giggles.
Yeah.
They're say $115 Australian, so that works out like $70 US.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're looking at something like Hallows, that's 470 grams of silicon.
Okay.
Gotcha. So it puts us in a position where we have to sell it cheaper in order to kind of match up. But at the same time, we're also caught by what will work for Australia because Australians won't really spend the money for that.
Mm.
So we kind of have to keep it that little bit lower if we can to try to make it work for our home countries.
Gotcha.
Buyers.
Right. Excuse me. It's interesting. It almost sounds like there's a cultural aspect that you're kind of fighting there.
Yeah, I think there definitely is. And again, because there isn't so much of a community here, that, you know, we've had people sort of turn around and go, oh, well, why would I spend $115 AUD on this when I can go to the adult shop and I can buy that for $30? I was like, yeah, but that adult shop jelly toy will give you cancer. Mine won't.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's part of what we have to do is educate as much as anything about, you know, what are the benefits of silicone and why do we use this particular material? And yeah, so Micah had a question about, and I think I kind of already answered it, but Micah, if I didn't ask the question and get you the answer that you wanted, let me know. But Micah was asking about burnout and what limits do you have to consider on your time and energy resources? How does that play into your control issues and avoiding burnout? So actually, George is taking credit for that one now. So, but I think I got that covered.
I generally tend to enjoy a lot of modeling and stuff, though, too, to be honest. Like, that's kind of become my downtime.
Yeah. Gotcha. Gorilla Machine asking, are you ever able to shut off design brain outside of work? And do you really want to?
Can I? No.
Well, that makes the second part of that question moot.
Do I want to? Sometimes. Sometimes. But I'm always sort of fooling around with something, even if the TV's on and, you know, it's 9 o'clock at night. I'll be fooling around with, whether it's a toy or whether it's just random little stickers that I will go, you know, this doesn't really fit that path, but I'm going to whack it into the store at some point because why not?
Right. It's, there are things that have, I actually have multiple lines of business, so I can actually kind of segregate things a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of nice. But my brain goes all over the place for product ideas and things that I want to do and projects, and mm-hmm. candles were one of them. But I haven't figured out how to make that viable yet. So, another question. Do you find yourself falling into go-to color combinations for pours?
Sometimes. So generally when we are doing the first pour in a mold, we'll always try to do it in the green, purple, and black. Because they're our colours and stuff. But every so often, I'll just get a mad fit and decide I'm going to just try these random colours, and then it comes out really pretty and then I can never replicate it again. Uh-huh. I think, like with Hallows, for example, there's always kind of that go-to of splitting the bubbles to the cauldron. I recently did a Hallows that's actually on TikTok, which didn't exactly turn out how I was hoping it would turn out. I kind of lost some of the last two colors, but it was good to just let the silicon go how it was going to go. And it was just really organic and just natural and do whatever, and not having to worry about the timing of splitting the bubbles up and getting the drip in at just the right time before everything's too sealed. It was good. So just to let it go and not cut the cauldron in it black.
Yeah. Something I just noticed, you mentioned that your colors are green, purple, and black. Those are my colors as well. And I didn't, I just realized even the tracers that are going around the images are green and purple and basically have a black and white background. So I just realized that we have that in common.
Well, we didn't realize until we joined Twitter on how popular those colors were in the community.
Yeah.
It wasn't until we joined Twitter and then we seen it and went, oh. So
yeah.
We actually picked the green and purple because it's Joker, and hubby's a really big DC fan.
Gotcha.
So that's why we went with the green and the purple. That's why we chose the mouth the way we did, because of the Joker smile.
Ah.
And then we kind of edited it to make our own.
Yeah.
The logo we bought off a designer that we sent the picture, and we emailed them and asked them and they said they'd be honored, and we paid them for it. And then we edited it a little bit. So we didn't realize until we came onto Twitter and went, oh shit.
Well, for me, it was, I fell in love with this purple, and then, you know, color theory is that, you know, the opposite color gives you the, the most contrast. And so that's where I went with it. ShopDad has a question, about defining a penetrable versus an insertable. I'm gonna read this out because ShopDad has a few things in here. Communicating what a penetrable is like in use. So communicating what it's like in use or how it is sized is much harder than with insertables. Any ideas or thoughts on how best to do that?
So that is definitely something that we came up against. When we got a little bit sort of more popular on TikTok, and we had people with penises of the male orientation, buying a lot of thin. Do I call it thin, or I get confused which one I call thin and which one I call wide? The one with the little hole. And then thinking that that was going to work for them, and it clearly was not going to work for them because it wasn't designed with their anatomy in mind. So I had a lot of emails and stuff to go out. I think I sort of looked at what is the average size of a penis. I know that sounds kind of probably a bit silly. So I kind of drew back on that master's degree that I've paid a lot of money for that I'm no longer using because I'm making silicone penises, right? Shut up, Troy. Giggling in the background. You know, that $55,000 is sitting there.
Right.
So, yeah, I kind of drew a little bit on that and went, all right, well, what size would I be roughly looking at there? And then aimed for somewhere in the middle of that band, and then went, okay, so if I make the exterior of, say, the sheath, for example, a certain thickness, it's going to enable the user to stretch it or squeeze it closed. So if I kind of put it in that bandwidth of where the average penis size is, and then allowed for up and down, then it would kind of fit the higher end and the lower end of the scale as much as humanly possible.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yeah. George has a comment in the chat here. We've done a significant amount of research on the average size of a penis. And I mean, the statistical average will get you a certain amount, get you down the road a certain amount. But then the actual real world experience of that is totally different. Let's see.
I think that's why we went with the acknowledging that the real world is never statistical entirely. There's always outliers. I myself prefer to be an outlier. Yeah, so that's why we sort of went with that thinner walls, so it could be up or down a bit.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Because silicone, especially the softer silicones, have a real high stretch factor to them, and they can stretch a lot before any damage happens to them. This one... what has been the most difficult mold for you, and what was the most difficult aspect of that mold?
So, the most difficult mold, to be honest, is Famael. I have failed, before I got my first one, I failed it 5 times. So I had 5 failed molds. No, it wasn't 7, was it? No, well, if you include the other ones. And then I tried to mold a second one the other day, and it turned out okay first off the bat. So I knew there was some dodgy witchcraft going on there. And then I tried to do it a third time and failed it another two times. So I gave up, and I wasn't going to put myself through it. But Samael is the most trickiest because of the way I do my molds and stuff. It's essentially a supported glove, but you've got to kind of get his noggin out and then almost kind of still twist at the same time, which having the big front end doesn't really help that. So I think I've broken the tongue on the master copy several times.
Oh.
Every single time I've demolded it, essentially. Bar one, I've broken it. Get it out.
That's painful.
I think Nymph was the one that everyone was saying was impossible, and that actually wasn't too bad. That wasn't too bad to get out. I think once I got the base, I could kind of just twist it out, and it worked easy. But Samael, the hellhound, that's the problem.
Oh, wow. Let's see. Outside of adult toys, what hands-on crafts would you find yourself creating?
So I do like to draw and stuff a lot. Reasonably good at it. I say that really tentatively. And so I do like make some little stickers up and things like that. I bought a Cricut with the intention of going, oh yeah, we can use this to make stickers for the business, but I could also make. And now it never gets touched unless I'm making stickers for the business.
Uh-huh.
Because we do all of that ourselves. We don't outsource it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that I had big plans.
Yeah, that is something that I think all of us who are creative and who start our own business and all this, there's so much that we want to do. And it's so hard to figure out how we're going to fit all of that in.
Well, I did for a little while before Dark Path. I had a little t-shirt business. That I've put it into dormancy now, that's why I have the relationship with the printer that prints our merch shirts and stuff. And I had a whole heap of different t-shirt designs and things like that I would sell, but then kind of Dark Path took over, so I put it to sleep. But I'm considering grabbing some of them and bringing them in, like, into the merch category or something like that, and stifling them in there.
Yeah.
Because I enjoy doing that too, so.
Yeah. Shop Dad had another comment. He was talking about, and I want to make sure that I get it correct here, the Alliance of Independent Sex Toy Testers Shop Dad has worked with. And form a good core group for figuring out what works for different bodies. That may be something I have to look into, learn more about them.
Grace Princess Previews is part of them.
Okay. By the way, I should mention that Shop Dad is going to be one of the guests coming up on... I've got Shop Dad booked for July 17th. So not next weekend. Next weekend is Sumptuous Galaxy. And then the week after that is Shop Dad. So I keep referring to him as Shop Dad because that's just how everybody talks about him. But that's also the Goblin Service Station. So, yeah. I've got a couple more questions for myself, and then we'll wrap up here in just a bit. And this is my favorite because there's so much I could throw into this. Tell me about a time where you had no idea what you were doing.
Every damn day. Every damn day.
Uh-huh.
I am just permanently winging it. Hoping and praying things work out.
Now, you've had a certain amount of success here, so you have to know a little bit about what you're doing every day, but something that you walked into it, you had no idea what you were doing.
I don't think there's really a lot that's ever sort of happened to me for, only because I, like, before I bought our laser cutter, for example, I spent like the 3 months while I was waiting for it watching every single thing on YouTube that I could watch that was anything related to laser cutting.
Yeah.
So I kind of, walking into something blind makes me feel really anxious.
Okay.
So I always try to do that sort of background research and stuff, so I know a little bit about what I'm doing before I waltz myself into a lion's den.
Okay. I have a laser cutter as well. I have a Epilogue 40 watt. So
nice.
That's a big part of my business, and like I said, I have multiple lines, so that's one of them. I do a lot of resin casting for folks, as well as doing the silicone. And then I had a follow-up, which you kind of already touched on, but, you know, how do you overcome that initial level of ignorance that, as you're waiting for that laser to arrive, how do you prepare yourself for that? Just YouTube, or what's, you know, what's kind of your go-to?
So YouTube was the first thing. That's how I taught myself how to do everything on a car that I know how to do is YouTube. I don't know how to do a YouTuber. But other than that, it's also like if there's any members or anything in the community that I know have something in particular. So I think there was Shop Dad actually reached out when I put up the post to say that I've got the laser, and he was like, "Oh, laser buddies." I was like, "Yes."
Yep.
So if I have questions or anything like that, or I'm unsure about something, I'm going to come pick your brain about it.
Yeah, so add me to that list.
Who has a bit of expertise. Yeah.
Because I've been doing laser cutting for about 10 years now. So, yeah, throw me on that
list.
Well,
you're in the firing line now.
Okay. Now, before we wrap up, I'm going to make sure that George includes all of your social media in the chat. I'm going to make sure that all of that ends up in the show notes and everything else in the description. But I had a note here that we kind of never really worked into the conversation, that you and Troy are kink educators in your local community. Talk about that a little bit.
So we've been members of our local community for a really long time. We were lucky enough to, I guess, get a lot of like learnings and teachings from some of, I guess, the, I say old guard, but I use that carefully because that's a term that's also used for a section of the community. So sort of like those elders of the community, we were really lucky to come in at a time where a lot of them were still quite active. A lot pre-COVID and stuff, and had a lot of people really share a lot of information. You know, I've been sort of a member of the non-monogamous community since I was 18, so I kind of already had a little bit of an understanding of, you know, non-heteronormative worldviews, which was really good. And then, yeah, we've just kind of sort of grown from there and gained experience from others around us and put things together. Or, you know, we've had a really good bunch of people around us quite early in the kink scene that were confident in us challenging them as well to say, you know, I don't think that's quite right. Tell me why, so that I can understand. And then if I don't understand, we'll come back and say, well, no, I don't think it's right because of X, Y, Z. So, and then we've just kind of, it's just kind of developed from there. Like we were dungeon monitors for a while for a local event where we oversaw events, safety things and all that type of stuff.
Right.
And yeah, it's just kind of developed from there where sort of, you know, people have come to us and gone, well, how do we do this safely? How do we do that safely? So we run occasional workshops on, you know, on primal and on wax and on different things, how they can be done safely and what you need to do to make sure they're done safely. So I guess which is why our knives took a little while to come out, because we needed to design them in a way that they felt like a knife, but if they tried to stab somebody, they'd smash. So we had to tweak those a little bit.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's an interesting problem to solve. Well, I am about to wrap it up. If there are any other questions, throw them in the chat. We'll come back to them if they get in time. But I have had a blast, and we're definitely going to have to talk more, and hopefully then I can be a resource for you on the laser.
Yeah.
And yeah, the again, the whole aesthetic that you've developed with your colors and your models and everything about Dark Path just speaks to who I am at my little dark core.
Thank you. It was it's just kind of rolled that way. So, but you know, as they say, we ourselves are strange and unusual. So
yeah. All right. Well, George has thrown it into the chat, but I'm going to remind everybody that there is a link tree for Dark Path as well. And you can hit that link and that will bounce you to all the different things that Dark Path has to offer. And I think there's an Instagram, there's a Twitter and Facebook and all the different things. I didn't see TikTok on there. So that might be something. I know I've got it in my list, so we'll throw it into the show notes as well. But unless there is anything else, who is that?
That's Troy.
Hey, Troy. I don't know if the mic is going to pick you up over there or not, but good to see you.
I know he's feeling and looking shaggy, so I'm like, I'm just going to chuck you in the light on.
Oh, yeah. Well, Manda, thank you so much for joining me, and I have had a blast, and we will do this again sometime.
Thank you so much for having us, and it's been really good. I was nervous, but I'm okay.
Were you? Well, I now never I got could... that.
Oh, I'm wonderful, wonderful faker.
All right. Well, then, with that, I am going to wrap it up and we'll get out of here. Again, next week, next Sunday, 7 o'clock Central Time, we have Sumptuous Galaxy. That is going to be July 10th. And then on July 17th, we've got Shop Dad with Goblin Service Station. And I'm really looking forward to those. Sumptuous Galaxy is one that is kind of a new shop, but they've gone a different direction. I'm really curious to see and talk to them about how it is that they are doing what they do. And Shop Dad has just been such a wonderful resource to the community that mostly it's a chance for me to just gush about how awesome they are. But thank you once again, Manda from Dark Path, and we'll do this again next week. Good night, everybody. Bye.